Think about what you had to eat today. This morning, you might have taken some time to get a quick breakfast before heading off to school. Then, lunch during the day. A nice home-cooked meal at the dinner table with your family. Not to mention all the snacks you had on the side. You probably have enough, if not plenty, of food to eat. But imagine you didn't. What would happen if you had to resort to government aid to buy your food, or if food prices soared so high that you'd have to fight to get enough to eat? Literally. I spoke with Dr. John Hadanat, a senior research fellow from the Poverty, Health, and Nutrition Division of the International Food Policy Research Institute at his office in D.C., who says food insecurity is a major problem around the world in not just developing countries, but developed countries as well. Lately, I've seen the term food insecurity all over news websites, but it is a new term for many people. What exactly does it mean?
Okay, the simplest sort of textbook definition is someone is food secure when they have sufficient, nutritious, and culturally appropriate food that enables them to live a healthy and productive life.
Would you say there's a food insecurity problem right now?
There has always globally been a food insecurity problem. Our best estimates at the moment are that approximately 1 billion people around the world are food insecure. That's one person out of every six, or approximately 17% of the world's population could be described as being food insecure.
Would you say it's a problem for everyone in all countries, developing and developed?
It is a problem in both developing and developed countries, but it is a problem which is much more virulent and widespread in developing countries. In order to think about solutions, it's necessary to be clear about what the problems are. Now, many people, when they come across the concept of food insecurity, assume that the fundamental problem is that of insufficient supply, that the world, in some sense, doesn't grow enough food for everyone. And certainly, at the moment, that's factually incorrect. The problem is not so much that of there not being enough food, but rather that there are many people who cannot afford to buy the food that exists.
So is it more of a poverty problem?
So in the short to medium term, it's very much a problem of poverty, that people do not have the income, they do not have the resources, that enables them to buy food at the going price. Now, when we look to the longer term, it's also the case that in the future, sometime over the next 10 years or so, that supply may also start to become a problem again. In order for a global food production to continue to grow, we need to continue to make investments in making agriculture more productive, particularly in developing countries.
I want to go back to the term food insecurity. Could you please explain what culturally appropriate means?
Okay, why don't I run through, in fact, all three terms. Sufficient means that, in effect, you get enough calories, okay, because calories give you energy, you need energy to undertake daily activities. Nutritious means that although you get enough calories, you also get enough vitamins and minerals, okay? We all need things like vitamin C and iron in order to function well. Very small children, for example, need to get adequate quantities of vitamin A. Zinc is very important for growth in very young children, and so on and so forth. So it's not only do you get enough calories, but do you also consume the right amount of nutrients. And finally, when we talk about culturally appropriate, it's a recognition that the types of food people eat in different parts of the world are very different. A good example is that a number of people, for religious reasons, don't eat certain types of food, whether they be pork or beef or others. And so when we talk about culturally appropriate foods, we mean, for example, a lot ensuring that people have access to the sufficient and nutritious foods, but also, for example, those that don't violate religious beliefs.
What can we provide for the people in developing countries who can't afford food?
Okay, I think, again, there is the question of what we do in the short term and what we do in the longer term. If we think of the fundamental problem being is that people cannot afford food, then the most important thing we can do is we can put in enabling conditions which allow them to actually generate the incomes, which would then in turn allow them to buy food. So, for example, if for people who work in agriculture in poor countries, helping them adopt new technologies that make them more productive as farmers, helping them develop infrastructure and markets, all can play important roles. Also important, for example, are continuing to make investments in education, in health, allowing people to live more healthy lives, to go to school, and so on and so forth. All these things, too, in addition to their intrinsic value, also in the longer run allow people to be more productive and therefore able to generate their own incomes. Now, for some people, they're going to be either currently or perhaps in the future, they're going to just have extraordinary difficulties to access food at the moment. And for those people, we need to think of interventions, what in Western countries we would call social safety nets, which actually protect those individuals, allow them to obtain at least some minimal level of food consumption, and at least provide them an income floor from which hopefully they can subsequently grow.
What can an everyday person do to improve the situation?
Okay, well, I think there are everyday people can get involved in several ways. There are many very good, reputable non-government organizations which are involved in helping people in developing countries, and contributing either time or money to those is an excellent idea. In addition, people can become politically active, lobbying their government, whether it be in the United States or elsewhere, to take on pro-development stances, to make this an important political issue in the United States and elsewhere.
What is an example of the safety net you were speaking of earlier?
Okay, well, for example, in Ethiopia, which is a large and very poor country in Eastern Africa, with assistance from the United States, the British government, the World Bank, and others, the government of Ethiopia has put into place a program called the Productive Safety Nets Program. And under this program, people who are very poor undertake work on public works construction projects. They help build roads, they plant trees, they improve water and irrigation, and other such activities. So under these types of programs, people in effect get access to a certain amount of employment. From the employment, they can generate income from which they can use to buy food. At the same time, the program is actually creating assets. It's improving or remedying environmental degradation, it's creating infrastructure, and so on and so forth. So in addition to providing people with income so they can buy food, it's also building assets, which can be a platform from which further income generation can take place.
What will happen if we don't find a way to produce more food or allow people to access it more easily?
A global failure to prevent food insecurity literally means that millions of people go to bed every night hungry. It stunts their human potential, it badly affects their children, and thereby not only has effects today, but also for subsequent generations. In the longer term, if we fail to get a grip on this, the numbers of those people are only going to rise. We know in some countries, when hunger becomes a major issue, that leads to things like rioting and political instability.
That was Dr. John Hadanat from the International Food Policy Research Institute, and I am Lan Vi Ngo, a science intern from Thomas Jefferson High School for Science and Technology in Virginia. For more information, check the February special issue on food insecurity at www.sciencemag.org.